Welcome to Silence, issue 291. Dear listener, oh, we value you so much, and we love you, each and every one.
Yes. And every one, and the other one. Both of you.
Yes, and even the ones who aren't ones. We love all each and every two as well. Yeah. I'd imagine there's probably some couples who...
listen to us while they're making love.
Yes. Well, I was thinking more of a sort of romantic evening, sort of curled up on the sofa.
For you, lovemaking is not romantic, but poor Mrs. Lactus.
I just imagined it more to be a sort of romantic preamble.
Okay.
The romantic, you know, you turn, like, silence has ended, you're both now in the mood, and on goes some appropriately
silky jazz.
I mean, who knows what you what all you couple listeners to silence like.
You might
like to really go at it to lightning bolt. Who knows?
Yeah, or the Renegade Master or something. You know, so a track like that, or Dr. Alban, It's My Life.
Yeah, or Dr. Jones by Aqua.
I've been listening to we've been doing a chart, a good behaviour chart for the Mini Beast, and when she gets a sticker. She has I Like to Move It, Move It, because obviously it's in Madagascar and every child now loves that song. But I have really grown to love that song too, because you know how you have to hear certain things a lot when you're a kid, and when you have a kid, sorry. And I'm always happy with the Mad Stuntman and Reel to Reel. So yeah. Anyway,
maybe I feel the same about Justin Fletcher's rendition of The Hokey Cokey.
Right, so what are we here to talk about? I can't remember. Comics is something, isn't it? Silence.
Comics,
isn't it?
Comics and related. Related can mean audio books, recipes, general life admin, and beyond. Politics, even.
Oh, we often get political on Silence. We are known for our insight.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So it's it's issue 291 of
correct.
Silence, which is 291 years of consecutive podcasting. That is a record. I believe we are the longest running podcast now.
Yeah, pretty sure. And we predate technology.
Before that, it was just us talking to each other. But then technology caught up. We were podcasting. Yeah. We used to go and do it.
But it's all come to this point, hasn't it? You know, the evolution of the internal combustion engine, meaning that I could now be here podcasting to you, dear listener, with
exactly.
You, the Beast Must Die, in my car.
Yeah, back in the prehistoric days, they used to... traveling entertainers would go from cave to cave and just talk about the cave paintings on that cave wall, but to each other, not to the audience. They'd just sit in front of the audience and talk about the cave paintings and give insight. And it was much the same, really. It was good.
Yeah. And of course, we can listen to those little lectures now through the stone tapes. Of course.
Exactly. Yes. Okay. Well, what should we
talk
about?
It'd be good if on the stone tapes they'd sort of captured these sounds that were imbued in the stones, and they were just like a comics podcast or something like that, some sort of DIY tutorial, something very dry. I guess we're kind of sponsored, but I'm not sponsored by Dave's Comics of Brighton, but I still like to mention them just in case. I would like Dave's Comics of Brighton to know that I'm ready to come crawling back.
I mean, you know, I'm sponsored by comics from the past. Anyone who wants to sell me those, that's who's sponsoring this show. But no, I'm sponsored by Gosh Comics of London. And as soon as I can get in that shop, you bet I'm gonna get in that shop.
Like a lovely warm bath.
I did.
You're gonna just take your clothes off. And run in.
Obviously, we're not recommending that people take their clothes off in Gosh Comics unless invited to. Then you can. Mm-hmm. That's fine.
Yes, absolutely.
That would be at the drink and draw night. you're either going to go as an artistic model and be drawn, or when the drinking's got to a certain point, then off come the clothes. So we've got a new section for you, though, haven't we, today? With dear listener and co-host Gary Lactus, and I'm the Beast Must Die. We've got a section that it's a joint section, and we're calling it Silence! Because the internet is a prick.
It is a prick, yes.
We've had fun on the internet, haven't we, in separate adventures.
Yes. In Twitter mainly.
Yes.
Pat Mills, of course, is a fabulous Twitter presence who is taking no prisoners, very outspoken about the many sort of injustices of the medium. And I saw the other day he'd been talking about other people using his characters that he'd created, and how much he doesn't like it and how it's bloody cheeky when people do that. So I thought I'd do a funny tweet to him saying, at Pat Mills, let me get the tweet up. I'll go to the screen grabs. Do excuse me, dear listener, while I because I wouldn't want to misquote anyone. I could potentially make everything worse, even worse. all right, there we are. Just looking at the Silence group now. I'd sort of done a kind of a summary of it after John Reardon had flagged up that I had annoyed Mr. Mills, husband of Mrs. Mills, of course, the famous piano player. right, yes, I tweeted at Pat Mills Comics. Just finished my new comic in which Nemesis and Torquemada finally team up. Don matching skin-tight costumes to fight Satanus. There's also cool new female characters called Nemesista and Torquemadam. Hoping you can write a foreword and some pull quotes. Cheers! Now, he didn't get that it was a joke, and it was at this point the mortification set in. I'm never quite sure where the line is between non-profit fan comics that are one wonderful homage to characters, fan comics sold for pounds, fan comics backed by pounds, crowdfunders and Patreon, pounds, satire comics and pounds, comics that seriously infringe copyright, so I'm best to steer clear. And a few people sort of then, you know, he's got these people
who are like acolytes.
Yes, because Pat Mills will respond.
He talks on Twitter.
He spends a lot of time responding to, you know, to people's queries and questions, and even just sort of comments, you know.
These people are very much the Terminators to his talk commander, aren't they?
The Falcon comes in at Falconry23, says, he is just having a laugh at rebellion, I think, Pat. And he says, perhaps, although that didn't come across to me. There were numerous major encroachments of copyright on martial law, to which the standard defence is, it's just a bit of fun. It's important everyone has strong boundaries. Non-profit is one boundary that is often crossed today. And then there are more people. Chris Weston actually kindly came to my defence. Nick Xylus, he says, it could be hard to tell a joke on Twitter. I hope it was a joke. And Pat says, could be, but it's a standard defence everywhere when someone takes the piss to say, hey, I was only joking. Don't be so serious. It needs calling out. It's the right thing to do.
I love these Chris, guys as Chris well, Weston step says, in. Third parties yeah. who step in to like talk about the issue with him. Fuck off.
Chris Weston says, I thought it was an obvious and harmless joke. Nemesister? I chuckled. Nick Xylus, Poe's Law, though, isn't it? It's not much worse than when American Judge Dredd comics introduced, like, 37 new dark judges with names like Judge Balls or whatever. And Chris Weston says, Fraser hasn't really done a Nemesis comic. That's the whole point. It's no different to me yesterday saying I wanted a Steppenwolf series that there's a dagger-encrusted suit get where his dagger-encrusted suit gets snagged on everyday mundane objects. If you know it's not real, then yeah. I thought it was probably a joke, but it's just plausible enough that it could have been real. Really? Okay, says Chris Weston. Nick Xylus, people do genuinely come up with stuff like that, unfortunately. To which I responded, I'm glad you thought it was a viable idea. Definitely going to make this comic now, asterisk. Asterisk, this is a joke. And then Pat Mills quote tweets that one and says, love it! It would be a creative challenge, even for me!
100% Pat, that response. I love it. Coming to the joke at the end, finally getting it, taking ownership and giving himself a huge pat on the back as well. But, I love it. That then, is 100% my guy.
But an hour later, after he's really had time to sort of mull this over and stew and get annoyed, he re-quote tweets my original concept for this brilliant comic with Nemesister and Torquemadam and says, I've actually had real propositions like this, on average at least one a month, for FFS. So forgive me if I don't stop and reflect which is real and which is satire. Thus, 2 weeks ago, I thought something similar was satire, and it turned out to be real. It's a time suck I can't afford. I think Twitter's a time suck, like, in general, for Pat Mills. But anyway, if you're listening, Pat, I really did honestly do it. I just thought it was a funny joke. I really did that. I still think it's a funny joke. Particularly Talk with Madam, I was really quite pleased with. But there we go.
So, yeah, I mean, it's crushingly obvious that it's a joke. And testament to his somewhat blinkered worldview in terms of, I guess it's how who interacts with him and how. He probably just, you know, barely reads things. It's just, you know. And I know that he's incredibly burnt by the he talks quite openly about how when I think it was Andy Diggle was the editor, he has a real, you know, he's really, this is not me slandering anyone, this is out there in the open, and he had a real problem with Diggle, who at one point rewrote some ABC Warriors without informing him that that was happening or whatever. You don't rewrite, Pat, all right? You don't do that. There are things that you don't do. That's one of them. He can rewrite you. You can't rewrite him. That is definitely a fact. But he kind of complained about the sort of obsequious fan approach that Diggle took with him before, you know, revealing his true colours, as it were. So I think he has this very thorny relationship with people who come in this kind of like, hey, I've got this great idea or, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I'm like, but for fuck's sake, Pat, I mean, come on. Like, it's just like, it does make you wonder about how some other encounters he may have had in life.
I really want to see these other proposals he gets once
a month. I mean,
I
bet there are some fucking amazing things that comics professionals get sent, to be honest with you. I mean, we, in our very tiny world of small press, I mean, even there at Thought Bubble, you'll get some people coming up and sort of talking to you and going, here's a comic, and you're like, right, and, you know, and it's like, you know, it's just, I think people just seek validation from what they, you know, other artists, and sometimes it can be, I don't know, yeah, it can be hard to, I don't know, anyway. But yeah, it's fucking hilarious that he that he just managed to not in any way understand that. And also, you got to piss off one of your childhood heroes. That's good. That's always fun,
isn't it? I was mortified. It was a mixture of like, Pat, Uncle Pat, and you know, because I'm Team Pat. Really, I was being Team Pat.
Yeah, it's odd, isn't it? It's odd. I don't like it. I mean, even like getting blocked by sort of people who you don't like, it has this odd, like, oh, you know, it's an odd space, Twitter, for encounters with people. Really, it's fun because sometimes you, like you say, people are available and open, and other times it's just like mortifying, getting kind of slapped down by your heroes or whatever. It's like, oh no, that wasn't fun. I had a strange one happen to me. So I did a tweet a while back where I just said something like, name a genuinely underrated comics artist. Steve, and I'll go first, Steve Parkhouse. What it really was an excuse for me to just say Steve Parkhouse, because I've just been looking at some work. And it got a bit of traction because it's kind of a nice, easy, popular sort of tweet to respond to. And people just like those things on Twitter. They tend to. And I got like Dave Gibbons retweeted it, and like Brian Hitch responded to it and stuff. And there were some quite, you know, big names started appearing. I mean, you know, big names in the world we live in. But, you know, seeing Dave Gibbons retweeted, oh, that's nice. So it kind of went out there into the world a bit. And obviously I got some amazing responses where it's like, no, I said genuinely underrated, not just name comic artists. That's not, you know, that's not the thing I was kind of going for.
Other people kind of correctly saying, like, I think all comic artists are underrated.
Oh, that's annoying. That's bullshit. Whatever. It's like, okay, yeah, that's right. Let's put Jim Lee up there then. It's like, no. What I'm talking about is the kind of people where you're like, they are genuinely, like Steve Parkhouse is a genuine master of his art. He's so good, and he's been so good for so long. And I just don't think that, you know, enough people get that. You know, he's an artist's artist. He's not in any way got, he's not even got like the kind of Mike McMahon stuff, you know. He's genuinely, I think, under the radar. So that was kind of my point, anyway.
He's also an older artist who has got his hands on Photoshop and started colouring his own stuff, and it doesn't look shit.
Oh, right, good. Okay. What I can think as well is that it must be nice at the moment because Resident Alien has been renewed for a second series. And, that's nice, isn't it? That's like a nice comic that you liked, and there it is up on telly, and people are enjoying it. And, yeah, so hopefully he's getting some cash from that. That'd be good. Anyway, so this, because it got a bit of traction, this tweet, it just rumbled along in the, you know, in your mentions as it does. Notifications. And then I woke up on, I don't know, Wednesday or something like that, Tuesday last week, and there was a kind of an at me and another guy relating to that tweet, and it said, you have talent, but you used it to humiliate and denigrate. That's terrible. Take into account your actions as an artist. And at first I was like, oh, this is like a bot of some sort that's latched on for some reason to this tweet. And then I got another one where it was like basically accusations of like racism. And then another one about kind of violence against Asians. And I was like, what the fuck is this? And I got a bit panicky because I was like, why am I suddenly getting atted with this stuff? And I looked at the guy who was kind of in the at with me, and I sort of did a little bit digging. And he's an artist and he does stuff for like various people, it seems like. But one thing he's done is I think he's a Garbage Pail Kids artist. And I don't know if they're still actually publishing them or whether this was a one-off thing, but for the Grammys he did a series of humorous, or was commissioned or asked to do a series of humorous sort of parodic, they were called the Shammies, and it was just the Garbage Pail Kids style but with, you know, Megan the Stallion and Megan the Stallion, sorry, old man, trying to talk about the young things, and various other people with, you know, ha-ha puns about them. And one of them, it just said K-pop bop, and it had, I think, BTS, the massive, you know, global kind of K-pop sensation. It had them in a kind of whack-a-mole situation, like with it being whacked on the head with Grammys. And I was like, you know, so not maybe not great that, you know, not a great thing. Certainly not that funny, but, you know, I was like, oh, okay. And I was like, oh, right, wait a minute, BTS, K-pop, oh, shit. And I was just like, oh, no, because, like, the K-pop armies are, like, a huge force on Twitter and social media, and they've done, like, amazing things where they've kind of shut down like right wing kind of hashtags and things, like, you know what I mean? They've just completely squashed things. They're like this amazing force that gets mobilized sometimes, or mobilizes themselves to sort of defend, either to defend their idols or to just, you know, do sort of weird like social activism. So it's a fascinating thing. I'm genuinely quite fascinated by it as a sensation. But I was like, oh no. And then I just was like, I don't want loads of tweets just accusing like me of linking me to like racism and violence against Asians and things like this. And the thing is, it was on the day that this awful shooting happened in America with the guy targeting like you know, Asian beauty parlors or whatever it was, and it's like, and hairdressers and stuff. And I was like, oh no, this is a bad time. So I basically like was like, I don't know what to do, and I spoke to some pals on Twitter, and they were like, I think you probably just have to ride it out, just mute it. And I was like, I don't like that though, because it's like I'm muting it so I can't see it, but I don't want this thing just going round and round and round and round, and just in case someone starts to be like, actually, who's this guy? Blah, blah, blah. So at one point I wrote underneath, because this one fan had sort of looped in like Tops and all these other people and just was like, you must apologize for what you've done, blah, 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 blah. You know, violence against Asians is not acceptable, blah, blah, blah. And I just was like, sorry, can you just take me out of this? Because I really, I have nothing to do with it, and I don't want, like, I just don't want to be linked to this, please, or something like that. You know, very, and very politely, the person came back and was just like, if you just mute me and mute the conversation, you won't see any more replies. But I'm afraid that justice must be served. And, you know, this person needs to acknowledge what they've done, basically. And I was like, okay. And I sort of, it was like,
that's as good as you're going to get.
It was absolutely,
that was nice.
It was absolutely nice. Like pleasant. But I loved the way it was like, of course, please do mute this conversation. We will continue our like targeted harassment of this person now, thank you, and you will be included, so just mute it for your own safety. I was like, okay, cool. And I actually did write to the guy and say, look, I'm really sorry to ask, but, well, you know, just like, would you mind just deleting that response, because I just don't want it in my anywhere near me. It's just I don't want to be. And he actually came back and was just like very like pleasant to me and just was like, yeah, sure, I'm really sorry, blah, blah, blah. He was like, I kind of misjudged this quite badly and they really are angry, sort of thing was the general vibe. And I was like, yeah, okay, well, you know, hopefully it won't be too much for you. And it was all very cordial and stuff. So, but it was weird. It was like touching the sort of the madness web. It was like getting close to the kind of, not to insinuate anything about like the fans or any of the, you know, the intention, like I don't really have an opinion on it. I think it's a pretty misjudged thing. I'm not sure. I'm not surprised that people were a bit angry about it, especially in the current climate. I do also think some of it is this insane kind of BTS, you know, like hardcore fanism as well. So it's a funny thing, really. I don't really have any opinion on it, but it was like, normally my interactions on Twitter and social media are just extremely like bubble-ish, and it's just harmless, me retweeting old DC trade ads normally and saying, oh, remember this? And people, well, yeah, man, I remember that. Great. And that's largely what happens. And then occasionally it's just like you kind of get beyond and it's like you've swum too far and you're suddenly in like the kind of territory where tweets get like, you know, go into the stratosphere. Not that this one did, but you know what I mean? It's like there's like an other that you're kind of like, oh, fuck. it was like getting near the source wall. Anyway, it was odd. And I got nervous. The few times it's happened to me where like a tweet's gone really massive and then you start getting like completely random people sort of taking issue with you and stuff like that. It is like, it makes me really uncomfortable.
Remember that picture of Iggy Pop?
No, it was Henry Rollins and Nick Cave, and
Henry Rollins and Nick Cave. And you said babysitting, and yeah, I noticed there were people saying like, "That's their kids."
Like, yeah, that's actually Henry Rollins and Nick Cave's
#everyday sexism.
Yeah, there was quite a lot of in amongst all the like hilarious stuff. There was a fair amount of that, and that still rumbles, you know, still comes up every now and then. But anyway, yeah. So the Twitter, it's annoying, and I don't like it.
No, but it's useful. We could end this on a sort of happy. Kind of, well, not really happy, just self-promotional note.
Okay, yeah.
I've done a 3-page comic written by your pal and mine, Ruan Bless, and it's called Milkman, and it's about a milkman on his last day in the future, and he gets abducted by aliens. But you'll have to read it to find out. But it's available for free at ruanbless, ruanbless.tumblr.com. And, yeah, you can go there. And, yeah, it was nice. I got to draw some sort of sci-fi stuff.
Yeah.
and I also had to... as reference, I had to take a picture of myself in the shower, which Lady Lactus did. That was horrible.
Oh, was it?
That was horrible. Just seeing this photo of me in the shower and my, you know, my sort of middle-aged gut hanging out and my really, like, teeny-weeny peeny. Like...
Well, shower
it was times, horrible. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I've lost weight since, but
sometimes it's things that these things that trigger it. That's fine. Whatever you need to see.
It's just like, you know, you get so used to seeing yourself like at eye level. You know, you see yourself from the same angle all the time.
Yeah,
and to see myself amazing. Like basically. Yeah, naked. Like I had to kneel down in the bath to get this shot because the shower head doesn't actually come down on me, and I needed water sort of coming down on my sexy body. So it's just this weird angle, and I was sort of kneeling down and hunched, and oh man, it was horrific. I've had to make sure that. The Google Photos, which of course backs everything up, I've had to make sure I delete those. But anyway, yeah, little peek behind the curtain there.
Into the magic.
Yeah, go and read it. It was really fun to do.
Yeah, it's good. It's really good. It looks great as well.
Lovely.
Yeah,
super.
It's horrifying using a photo reference. That's why I don't do it. And that's why
you learnt to draw properly. You're a cartoonist.
Not really. I haven't done any. I've been doing some stuff recently, some drawing recently for a project for a friend. And immediate instinct to start taking shortcuts and treat it a bit like oh God, I've got to get this done. And it was like no, stop. This could be an enjoyable thing. Drawing, it could be fun, couldn't it? It's like, yes, I guess it could. It's just like everything in life just feels like it has to be a hassle at the moment. So, just remembering that art is not always a hassle. Unless you're Picasso, in which case it always was a hassle. Or some insert other famous artist. Hey, listen. We talked about Twitter, and here's a great link. Twitter has been on fire recently with talk of the Snyder Cut. And I had the day off on Friday, and I've already recounted to you via email my lovely walk I did. I did a nice big walk because I didn't have to look after it. It was a proper day off. I did a nice big walk on my own all the way down like through the marshes and the canals and near me, and it was just like a big old hike until you can't hike no more kind of thing, with lots of nice listening, and the weather was good and I was very happy. But I was also like, I set off quite early because I was like, I've got other business to take care of when I come back. And that was the Snyder Cut. And I have watched the Snyder Cut.
So is it time for silence? Because the film started.
Yeah, it's a new section. It's called Silence Because the Film Started, and it's still going, and it's still going, it's still going. It's 4 hours, and now it's finished. That's the section. yeah. So this is like a 4 hour. And I still was under the impression that it was getting released as a mini series. That was how it was pitched. Was that they were going to do like a 4 hour mini series. And it is broken up into sort of episodic chunks in a way, so you can sort of see that still there. But no, it's been released as a film. And it's a thing. I have many feelings about it. But my main one was, I did not resent watching it in the slightest. I had, at various points, a very good time watching it. And it was such a consistent and preposterous tone that it was just a fascinating thing to sit through, really. I'm trying to think of the best way to sort of describe it. I think I said to some others that it was like an opera, like a grotesque, po-faced, ridiculous, simplistic opera, but it was an opera. Like it was pitched so high and so relentless that you just couldn't help but kind of get swept along by it. I mean, unless you just kicked against it, and then that stuff was there from second one. So if you're going to have a problem with it, if you're going to start watching going, this is ridiculous, it's like you just don't bother watching it, because you know it is utterly at a certain pitch, and it never ever ever comes down from that. And Zack Snyder is a genuine sort of meathead auteur. He's like a sort of jock auteur, and so there is an actual sort of auteurist intent in what's going on. It's just such a strange one, and it's like a really, 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 really teenage vision of what darkness is, married with like a sort of Michael Bay fetishistic love of spectacle and technology and all the things that computers can do on film, and then married to like just a really sort of heart on sleeve intensity that is quite hard to process at first, because you're like, he really, really means this. He means it so much. And it's that kind of carries the whole thing along. And the fact that you get just moments of genuine sort of superhero spectacle that are so good. You know, like there's the battle with the redesigned Steppenwolf and the Amazons is like something out of Lord of the Rings. And it's incredibly exciting and wicked. And I really enjoyed it. And, you know, it's not a vision of apocalypse that I'm particularly down with. It's not a vision of the Justice League that I'm that down with, but it is a vision. And I think you just got to go, okay. And it's committed, and it's holistic. And what it isn't is full of people winking and nudging and being all smart ass. And like, it's the opposite of that. It's like the difference between comics in the sort of, I don't know, it's like a difference between 80s, early 80s and sort of 90s comics. I don't know. There's a bit more of a straight facedness to it. There's no sort of smirking. There's no knowingness. It's pitched at a very straight faced way. But, you know, like, it actually, he uses the screen as a sort of, like, I think he got it out of his system a bit with Watchmen and maybe 300, where he was literally recreating comics panels, and it was awkward and a bit kind of naff. And like, I really hated Watchmen. You know, I just thought it was an inert piece of fan wank, which had occasional moments where you're like, Jesus Christ, that's actually a beautiful recreation of a Dave Gibbons panel, but ultimately was a fucking huge and pointless mess of a film, which completely, you know, lacking in life. But he seems to have got that out of his system, and now what he's doing a bit more is using his camera and his sort of shot construction to sort of act like a comic artist. So there are sort of scenes of such striking, dynamic, like powerful, ridiculous superheroing going on. But it's akin to like when you read, do you know what it's very similar to, I think, is sort of reading like DK2, Dark Knight Strikes Back, where, right, you know, you may not glom to the vision of those characters, but it's tremendously exciting as a kind of reading experience, and it uses its pages like in a truly artistic pop art kind of way. And there's something about that sort of Frank Miller-esque, preposterous, but strangely like satisfying ultra heroism and ultra grit and ultra noir that all just kind of worked. And like, it's a film that you can so easily find fault with it, that it's boring to me when I see people kind of going, what about this? And what about that? And what about this? It's like, yeah, I mean, obviously it's ridiculous and gobbledygook and pretentious and po-faced and stupid and infantile and all those things. And yes, it's got plot holes out the wazoo and all that stuff. But also, it's just a thing. It's like a real monument to one person's like intent and vision, and you know, I like my superheroes weird. I like my superhero comics weird, and this is weird. This is weird. Like, you know, I tried watching the Avengers, the final one, and I was kind of swept along for a little bit, and then I just got bored because everyone was just like, I don't know, everyone was just being so sort of like with each other, and it never felt weird, and it never felt dangerous at all. It just felt like, you know, don't worry, we're going to comfortably land this plane and everyone's going to get off safely and you're all going to have a great flight. It was that sort of thing. It wasn't, you didn't feel like, what the fuck is going on here? Which is what I get from Zack Snyder's films. And that level of darkness, that's not me. That level of like gothy, techno, fetishistic, noir-y darkness, that's not my thing. But when I see someone just kind of going for it like this, it can be my thing. You know, it's a thing to just drop into. I don't have to kind of go, yeah, I love shit that's like that. I mean, I kind of really liked it, basically. And there's some really good acting in it. Like, I've seen people railing a bit about Gal Gadot, saying, oh, she's a bit wooden. I think she's not. It doesn't really matter. It's not really a performance about nuance or sort of. But she sort of inhabits this Wonder Woman presence like really compellingly, and she kind of conveys this absolute like nails demigod quality with like warmth.
And that's more because she was really really underused in the Whedon.
Yeah, and also he used her for kind of like people going, oh my God, so hot. You know, it was like that kind of like, she's the, no. I mean, one thing is that like Snyder doesn't sort of sexualize people. He does. He sexualizes everyone, really. But it's not really sexualized. It's not the right word. He loves the human form. Yeah. There are many, many shots of Jason Momoa's chest and Henry Cavill's chest in this film. It is like deeply in love with the male form, and it's similar to sort of, I don't know, like, yeah, it is that sort of like Frank Miller, the way you can tell he really likes like kind of hard looking women, and Snyder is just really into the sort of imposing, stentorian sort of fearsome beauty of Wonder Woman, but not in a kind of leering way. I didn't feel that. I certainly didn't feel it, and It's much more leering about Momoa, and rightly so. I mean, come on, let's go. And, you know, Ray Fisher as Cyborg gives this really quite sort of intense, odd performance where he's actually kind of like the sort of broken heart at the centre of the film, and given loads to do and made really essential. And that's really good because, you know, he was really tacked on, and it's often just like, oh, you're the black guy, so you can be sort of boring. You can be the boring black guy in this film. Is that okay? But don't worry, you'll sort of be cool as well. And it's like, he's actually
given
loads. We're
all white people making this film, and we don't want to say the wrong thing, so...
Yeah, we'll make you good and boring. And no, he's given loads to do. He kind of, he puts in this really, like, I don't know, like, it's, again, it's like, it's all so heart and sleeve. They all seem to be taking it so seriously and committed to it. And I think that, you know, someone said, oh, it's not, I want my superheroes to be camp and it's not camp. And I'm like, it's camper than anything else. It's camper than anything that strives for campness, because it's so goddamn serious. It's so goddamn serious that it straddles way into the camp, sort of, but without all that kind of nudging, winking stuff. It's just like, no, this is really camp. I mean, don't get me wrong. I couldn't recommend it. I would, you know, like I said to my wife, oh, you would hate it. I mean, you would. She already knew she'd hate it, but I was like, no, I'm definitely not going to make, even in any way, suggest you watch it. And I would put that caveat out there. I think there are people who would sit through this and go, I hated every second of that. But I think it's well worth, I think it's well worth people's time. And I'm just happy. I don't really care even whether anyone else watched it. I was just happy to have another genuinely weird superhero cinematic experience, basically. So yeah, I liked it.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. I'm glad you had a nice day. Sounds like you had a cracking day off.
It really was. It was excellent. And yeah, and it's amazing what a good day off at the moment carries, you know, it carries a lot of weight, because it's sort of, we're no one's having any days off. It's just like relentless shit. So anyway,
I'd love that. I'd love that to happen to me. That would be wonderful.
Yeah, it's good when you don't have to look after your kids as well. Much as I love my daughter, and I loved spending, I had a day off with her, and that was lovely. But it's also nice to be like, I can make my own decisions now, and I can move freely at a speed that I choose. That's nice.
And we've just got to get to September, and then they go to school.
Yeah. Oh God, no. That's just terrifying. So let's.
I find myself going thinking, but then no, we'll get to that point, and then, like, you know, I'll have this time and this time. But of course, it's just going to be subsumed by a whole new load of problems and a whole new load of worries.
Worry about out at school. Yeah.
And it's like, I'm not happy. I want them here.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to homeschool her. And as everyone's realizing, that is not a good idea. Homeschooling. Do we have any other preambulation? I mean, that's the majority of the episode, probably. But
yeah. Well, good, because I've had very little time to, you know, in between drawing comics and doing. But dear listener, if you have a pet, but or just want a commission, I'm doing commissions now. I did a picture of a mate. Because he took this really good picture of his dog, and she was perched on this sort of Chesterfield armchair. I thought, I'm going to take that off Facebook. I'm going to draw it, and I thought, that looks great. I know, I'll put a picture of him behind it. I'll draw him behind, look like a bodyguard, and she looks quite sort of queen. I'll put a glass of champagne there. And I did that, and then people are like, oh, my God, I want a picture. So I've done one other one. I've done one commission. So, yeah, I don't know. If you want a picture of... It doesn't have to be you and a pet, but if you want a drawing, it's working out about just under minimum wage for me at the moment, the amount of time I'm spending on it. So get in touch. I'm very happy. It'll be digital. You'll just get like a TIFF. You print it out yourself. Anyway, that's my sales pitch.
It's a good one, that.
Yeah. It's honest, isn't it? It's honest. let's go into the review universe for Jiminy Cricket's sake. Let's go now. Come with us to review the Beast should probably, we were going to record this last week, but that didn't happen. We have, in between this and the last episode, we've done two other podcasts. But, of course, one of them you'll only hear if you're a member of C Unit and donate money to our Patreon. And the other, you'll hear, we're doing paternity cover for someone on another podcast. We'll mention that nearer the time. That was fun. We did a podcast with Al Kennedy. That was a lot of fun. That was the best night out I've had in about a year. Just talking about Secret Wars with you two was lovely. That was exactly the wrong time to mention that. I have read some comics. I read a comic. This was something that I've been fascinated with since, I don't know, it was about 12 or 13. I got this Book of British Comics. Do you know it?
Is it Dennis Gifford or...?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think at various points, I think my uncle had it. I think it's come into my life a couple of times, but yeah.
Yeah, it's just like, it's just loads of pictures of the front covers of comics and and listing them. And one of the more modern ones was something called PSSST, P-S-S-S-T, exclamation mark, which was a comic that came out in 1982. And I just remember being sort of quite fascinated by the cover of the first issue. It was this ghostly green hand coming through what looked like a wall in a spaceship and sort of beckoning with its finger, and it's psst. And I was like I'd lived through this period of comics. 1982, I was cognizant. I have memories from then. I was, frequently in newsagents, and I had no memory of it. And it just seemed like this sort of, just this fascinating thing, and I always wanted to know about it. It was in this sort of, it looked like a sort of John Higgins style. It's not John Higgins, though. But I managed to get issue 8, August 1982, of PSSST, The Cartoon and Strip Monthly for Mature Readers, an Art Pool production. This cost £1 in 1988. The front cover is a sort of a cyber woman. that very 80s, that coming out of the 70s into the 80s, there was still a lot of airbrushing going on.
Is it issue 8, did you say you've got?
Yeah, issue 8. You're looking at it.
Yeah.
And it's a sort of very... it's kind of naive, isn't it? It's like the form is bad, but the technique is... I don't know, she's got the sort of great big green lips. The ears look a bit funny. And... I don't know. What is it?
It's got like the colour palette and sort of artistry of a sort of 70s, I don't know, sex manual or something. It's got this really like, I don't know, it's pastel or something. But then it's got this cyber. Yeah, it's odd. It's like someone trying to sort of do Corbin or something.
Or it sort of reeks of that kind of early D&D manual.
But yes.
Sort of done really well and spent loads of time over, and they've had their tongue in the corner of their mouth while they're drawing it.
Especially when they were drawing those great boobs.
The form is not really there.
It's like they started with the boobs, actually, and then worked around the rest of it. Yeah.
Yeah. It is, I would say, an extremely mixed bag. Now, Shaky Kane had some of his early stuff in this. There's some early bits of Luther Arkwright in here.
Right.
And they really stand out. There's Glenn Dakin has got some stuff in here as well. Who later turned up in Escape, and I think did Glenn Dakin turn up in Deadline as well?
Yeah, and he did. There was some of his stuff was published in Strip as well. That Marvel,
that's right, grab yeah,
bag, kind of mature readers grab bag comic. There was some original Glenn Dakin stuff in there. Yeah, he's great. He's really good.
It really is good the content. Oddest mix of. All right, so you've got a sort of very arty piece with these sort of puppets clashing into each other, and it turns out they're being a two-pager. It turns out they're being controlled by these sort of weird, hideous, grotesque things, which is it's kind of, you don't know what it's saying exactly. And then you've got this thing, Outlaw, which is. Yeah, again, it's a sort of aping Corbin, I'd say.
Right.
It is Corbin, isn't it? He died recently.
Yeah.
So
Jeremy it's Corbin, just, that's right. Jeremy
yeah,
Corbin.
Yeah, exactly. I say Corbin, and I'm like, no, that can't be right, because Corbin...
It was Ronnie Corbin.
Ronnie Corbin, yeah. And that is sort of, it's got very bad storytelling. There's some sort of prison break going on involving they wait until it's raining, and then they break a thing, but then all this water comes in, but they don't know. I've no idea how this water. It's just very confusing. And then you've got the cartoon portfolio of Phil, is it Phil Differ? Phil Diffler? Let me check that. Phil Littler. Oh. Phil Littler. And these are just like sort of sub Daily Mail, like little cartoons. You got a, oh, there's a, okay, so you have a big woman with strong arms and her hands on her hips, and a guy who's in a, like, obviously, if you're a man, you wear a shirt and a tie, and he's sort of on the floor with stars coming out of him, his head, and he looks very annoyed, and there's a woman in the middle behind a desk with a sign that says, Marriage Guidance. And he's saying, all right, then, you don't get touchy.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's like that kind of no actual editorial mandate, just like some people, they knew.
Yeah, and you've got this same, like, sort of big, domineering woman with a husband on his armchair and a friend on their armchair. She's standing. There doesn't appear to be anywhere for her to sit. And he is covered in water, the friend, with a sort of cigarette drooping from his mouth. And she is holding a bucket and looking very stern. And he is saying, you'll have to excuse Mavis. She doesn't like people smoking in the living room. Yeah. And then you've got the continuing adventures of Art. And then you've got some sort of pleasingly angular stuff, which, like, kind of doesn't mean anything. And then you've got some more airbrushed fantasy of this sort of muscly silver guy with red glowing eyes. Just loads of airbrushing everywhere. and the words are by the editor here. later, alien yet, his force remained, rising anew with purpose still unattained. Yet he knew, in his sense of that resurrection, that in his path and his gift there would be revelation. Although unknowing in its purpose, he took the new power into harness, finding his spirit removed from the force finally proved. It's fucking nonsense. And the pictures don't really... It's just a guy sort of walking along with a sword and just sort of looks like he's sort of floating in space. And, yeah, that's pretty awful. I can now see why this wasn't some lauded thing. And there's an interesting thing. I tried to find out more about it online. I mean, I'm not going to go through every little thing in this. And I haven't read every single thing in this because I was like, oh, actually, yes, I can see why it was obscure. Paul Gravett worked on it.
Right, okay. And yeah, I do remember
an article.
Like, I sort of feel like it came back. I don't know, maybe it didn't. I'm sure there was another comic called Psst that came out a bit later than that. But anyway, yeah.
I don't remember that or know anything about it. But young Paul Gravett was... it was started by a French couple who thought that, like, the UK really needs, you know, a sort of adult-orientated bande dessinée-style thing, and that could really work. Paul Gravett had to go around in a converted double-decker bus with lots of, like, sci-fi imagery in the windows, and he would go around the country, like, going to various art colleges, trying to, like, find talent in this specially commissioned bus, and the top deck was turned into a cinema, and... this was sort of promotional thing for it. And that, I think that's where they found Glenn Dakin. And they were put up in hotels. Can you imagine that now?
Yeah. For this imagine, thing.
We're going to make a comic. So what we need is a bus. And that's how you're going to go around and try and attract talent. And editorially, it was... by all accounts, done sort of by committee, which is why it totally lacks any identity.
Yeah.
Why you've got these sort of these Daily Mail style cartoons alongside some absolute hippie bollocks.
Yeah.
In 1982 as well, when was that had gone. You know, it's someone who had like. Smoked a load of weed, read a load of Elric, and thought, oh, I could, you know, maybe ape something more Kockian, but with absolutely no substance at all.
Yeah, I mean, when I was getting started, I remember, like, but you know, getting involved in the small press scene, and it was really nice to, like, meet other people who are making comics, and some of my very favourite comic people ever, you know, I met through that, really. But I remember there was that whole kind of say yes to whatever you were asked to, you know. So someone would be like, oh, I'm doing an anthology. You want to be involved? Yeah, sure. Maybe it'll lead to big things. Yeah. and so many times I'd, like, find myself in some anthology and I'd just be like, it's really hard to see my strip. Because there's so much shit in amongst it, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying my stuff was amazing. I'm sure some people may have looked at mine and gone, "No thanks," as well. But there was just that weird thing where it was like, because it was all so, the whole thing was just often quite basically, no one's making any money out of it. if you're doing these. So a lot of the time it's a cooperative attempt, and a lot of the time it's like you're just looking for content, so you just say, yeah, sure, and you almost accept anything. And especially if you're...
It's nice to be asked. It is nice to be asked. I remember you being asked for these things and thinking, oh, no one asked me.
Well, yeah, but then you go, oh, well, so there was some good stuff, but there was some bad stuff. And we did, you know, we did a couple of anthologies. And I did one called How, which was, I curated that in terms of the content. I didn't do a good job of particularly putting it together. I don't like it when I look at it, but I think there was some good stuff, and I picked some really good like people to be involved with it. But even then, I just was so like, oh yeah, I mean, it's horror, just do what you want, because I just didn't want to pressure people. But it's like, you know, you can sort of see how actually you do sometimes need to get a bit of guidance or theme, or just be an editor a bit more, maybe. But it's hard because like no one's making any money out of it. So,
yeah, in that case, it's like, yeah, what, you know, what leverage do you have? What rights do you have to say anything?
We did. Really? We did it. The best thing we did was we did a really. No one's seen this because we only did about 10, but we did a little thing called Escape from January, which I came up with as a kind of. It was to be done in January, and it was when we were sharing a studio. The idea was that you had the title Escape from January, and it was to use the month of January to sort of try and fight off the inevitable blues of January by doing a comic story and kind of getting it out of your system. And we just went out to a couple of other people, I think. Neil Evans, I remember, really good.
Nelson Evergreen.
Nelson Evergreen, yes.
His was really good.
Yours
was good. That was one of the better things I've done.
What was it you did?
The thing I did for Howl was not good.
What was the thing you did for Escape from January? I can't remember.
It was the Edney Bear.
Oh, yeah. And it was actually like, because we just didn't really, it was quite limited in who we went out to, and we had this kind of theme, and we were quite sort of, I don't know, we just got on with it and did it. And it was kind of great, actually. I really enjoyed the output of that. In some ways, I sort of quite like to have done a series of like themed anthologies where you just get given a concept and you sort of a limited amount of time to get it done and just bang it out there. But yeah, it's really hard. The more you invite people in, the harder it is to kind of retain control or quality control, and it is really harsh. Like I don't think if I sort of was like, yeah, sure, submit something to me, I don't know if I could be like, no, not you, that shit, sorry. Like, but you know, if you listen to Uncle Pat talking about the early days of 2000 AD, he didn't take any prisoners, Fraser, as you know well. Doesn't take any prisoners. So yeah. Yes. Anyway, yes.
And I can definitely say I am not his prisoner.
No. You are. You may. He may own your soul now, though. That is the only thing.
Ow. Okay. Interesting.
I don't want your soul, but I've bloody well got it.
So that was pissed. I don't know whether I'm still fascinated or I've looked at buying other copies. I'd like to see this early Shaky Kane work that's in there.
Where did you get it? Was it from Lawn?
It just turned up. I would like to see more, but this, I mean, it lasted 9 or 10 issues.
It was 10 issues, just looking
10
at
issues, thing, yeah. It didn't make the year.
No, but, you know.
What a thing to have occurred, really. It's just a shame. It's just a shame, isn't it? Just everything's just a shame.
Shame.
Yeah. What an odd thing to have happened. How many lottery winners are there a week? Even just in this country, you know, you've got the Euro Millions twice a week, you've got the regular lottery twice a week, now you've got or Set for Life, which is where you get 10 grand a month for life or for 30 years. Why does no one have any imagination? Like, there is a serious lack of folly in this country. And that only happened because some rich people from France came over and said, "Oh, we'll build our folly in France, in Britain." And yeah, we just, oh man, what happens? What do these people do? people with money doing? Why isn't anyone doing anything stupid and brilliant with money?
Yeah, and also, I mean, just that there was ever, I don't know, just enough of a market, potential market for British comics and things. Because I always think, like, with Deadline days where they had an infusion of money up front, and like, if you were like Jamie Hewlett or Phil Bond, and you were, like, I don't know, 19 or 20 or whatever they were when they were doing their work, it was like, we're going to go on tour around Britain, like basically like a band, go to all these comic shops and like nightclubs and just, you know, basically. It's like, fucking excellent. Yes, please. If you were like 20 years old and like drawing comics that, you know, just suddenly you're just going around the country getting pissed on, you know, and getting paid to do so and, you know, selling comics. And I don't know, I was like, yeah, can you imagine that? Like there being a kind of a tour or like, like a launch at a trendy London nightclub for your comic. It's like, no. No,
chuck money at it. I guess the thing is that folly is exactly that, isn't it? And you're much better off giving it to charity or something like that.
I think follies have value, don't they? They definitely have value.
Yeah.
They make for good stories, and they make for like strange art happening that would never have a chance to get out there. And
I do fantasize about being in that situation. Would I want to be the person who's like, I honestly don't know how I would justify someone saying, well, you know, you could have given that to a malaria charity and definitely have saved millions of people from dying. It's like, yeah, but I did make the world's biggest comic. that covered the Houses of Parliament for 4 days. And no one could read because it was too big. Or whatever. I don't know, you know. But anyway, there we go. Psst. That's pissed.
Pissed
the comic. Have you read anything?
I have. I've got, talking of anthologies, I've got a different kind of anthology, a one-person anthology from, published in 1987, Kiss of Death, number 1 and 2, which was a solo anthology
That's really quite early for you.
I know.
It's not even 1988.
No. And this was John Watkiss, who is an artist who died recently. He died last year. Really sad. Way too young. And he you might remember him. He did the second arc of Sandman Mystery Theatre the first year of Sandman Mystery Theatre. It was looked to be sort of a rotating art cast before it settled into Guy Davis. And so Guy Davis did the first four. John Watkiss did the second one. He did the, the Tarantula or something. No, I can't remember what it was.
Was Guy Davis.
His art was really nice. The Brute. No, it wasn't The Brute. Anyway, it doesn't matter. It was like issue 5 to 8. And his art
was
really...
It's not the ones
really...
that had the Chinese people that were coloured bright yellow.
Yeah. The really mortifying colouring choices. But the art itself was beautiful.
And then they were like, it was a printing problem. I don't believe that.
But that was not John Watkiss's fault. That was the colourist's fault.
No, of course.
And he is was a phenomenal artist, like really like beautiful kind of confident brushwork. And I in this increasing world of computer madness, I just love looking at comics where you can see someone's brush at work. And this was Kiss of Death, was like published by Acme Press, like kind of British thing, because he was British, John Watkins. And so there's some names involved who like helped him write some of the things. So some of the, it's basically an anthology, a horror anthology with a number of short stories, very much in the EC Comics mold. Nothing particularly original about the actual content per se, but it's the telling really that's the treat. But you've got like Dick Hansen, who is writing it, and he possibly edited Speakeasy maybe at one point, and then like Bambos is responsible for writing one of them. So it's just, it's a bunch of people where you're like, okay, yeah, it's that time in British comic, in small press world, really. But it's great. There's like four or five short stories in each one. And like I say, they're sort of, some of them are kind of better than others, but they all look wonderful. Like John Watkins is like a more sort of abstracted and adventurous version of David Lloyd's brushwork. You know how like David Lloyd is very controlled and wonderful, but Watkins is like that, but he kind of puts in more like jarring angles. Everything, the camera, as it were, like moves around quite a lot, so people are shot from like dramatically from below or above, or and there's like extreme close-ups and stuff. And it's I guess it's from a school of more like classical illustration. It's there's shades of like Alex Raymond or Gene Colan, I guess, even like. Yeah. But it's just really beautiful. And these were just something that Lawn put up, and they were, I don't know, 50p each, something like that, quid each. And I picked them up. It was a 3-issue miniseries that I don't think the third issue ever got published. So this is all there is. But yeah, really good. Like really, really good. If you come across these, they're well worth it. And he is just phenomenal, actually. It sent me down a little rabbit hole of looking up his work. And yeah, he's really, really good. And very sad that he died. That's shit. But yeah, he did. I think the last thing he worked on comics-wise was that, Surgeon X, the Karen Berger comic, which I never read, but yeah, he did that. So I saw a little obit from Karen Berger about him, and that was how I was like, oh shit, he died. But yeah, it really good, and I like these kind of oddball British comics from that sort of interesting mid-80s period. So you got those what are they called, the publisher who did all of those weird Harrier comics.
Yeah Harrier, yeah.
They're always fascinating to get because, again, it's that funny mix. So Harrier was like, in my dreams, Gary Lactis, I write a book, and it's a book, and it's all about, it's like oral histories of all the kind of publishers that have got come and gone. And, you know, so all those kind of like Harrier, you know, First Comics, Eclipse, all these ones that kind of, you know, Pacific, I just love to do that, really, and just find out about what the kind
with
of...
With a foreword by Neil Gaiman.
Oh, of course. Neil Gaiman going, well, I wrote for all of these comics, all these companies. No, but I love that. I'm so fascinated by, like, the idea of, like, these... You know, someone like Harrier put out a bunch of stuff, like, over a couple of years, and Trident Press as well, you know, the ones who... And they sort of... Harrier put out, like, loads of titles, and they focused on this sort of fantasy D&D style. But then you had, like, Ed Pinson and Phil Elliott and Glenn Dakin and Eddie Campbell doing stuff as well through Harrier Comics. Or, that whole new wave crew, kind of Woodrow Phoenix and stuff, they did stuff through it. But then you just got all these oddball, I don't know if it was a shared universe, but they're all called, like, you know, Dragon Sword and whatever. But it was this very curious British fantasy sci-fi publisher. But, you know, Steve Yeowell, for example, he got his first work through some of those. And I've got them upstairs. I think it's like Swiftsure was the anthology that he was part of, I think. And he did a strip called Lieutenant Fluff, which was, I don't know, just some sort of steampunky sci-fi thing. But it's beautiful. His stuff is really great. But then he's rubbing up against some much less good art, much more fannish and a little less accomplished and stuff. But it's nonetheless, it's just like spawned a bunch of really interesting stuff. But like, what the fuck was it? Where did they get their money from? What? How did it come about? What? How did it live? How did it die? I'm just so interested in that world, and that time of, I don't know, the black and white boom, really, where it was like people like Dave Sim and the Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird and all those people who'd like coined it in somewhat or proven that, you know, it was completely viable to do your own self-published stuff, and suddenly there was this little flurry of activity. For a while it seemed like it was like, hey, this is the brave new world, it's not just Marvel and DC, and now we're like, yeah, those days are long gone. You know, no one wanting to make any money, but like, I know, I'm gonna set up a comics company, that's sure to make loads of money in this kind of current market. So that's good. Kiss of Death by John Watkiss.
I'd love to look at those. What can I talk about? Apart from pissed, I've been reading The Eternals by Jack Kirby.
Oh, yeah.
Because I got a bunch of them ages ago, and as I was doing a bit of a sorting out the other day, I was like, oh, I haven't read these. There's an Eternals film coming out, isn't there?
Yeah.
Well, I should probably sell these, shouldn't I? I should probably read them first. I mean, really, there's nothing to say. It's Jack Kirby. It's bonkers. It's bonkers with a big cast. So I've got a consecutive run here. I've got 6, 7, 8, 10, 11, 12. I don't know what happened in issue 9. But I've read a few of these now. And they are not written in the way that you're used to comics being written. In the... you know, you have an even balance of the characters in each issue, and there's a single arc going on. There's sort of like this one huge story, and each issue kind of seems to be concerned with one or two of these Eternals characters. They're immortals who have been on Earth since early times, and what I was quite enamoured by. In issue 7, we have a fair amount of this character. He's got a sort of Dalek helmet on, and they're looking at Celestials like they're capable of like turning people into small boxes and sort of collecting them. Oh God, what's his name? So you can look him up. Gammon. Just all the names. Gammonon. Gammonon the Gatherer returns with his rod of life seed. Ajak, yeah. Look up Ajak. He's got like this sort of his head is like a cross between a fish and a Dalek.
Is that with a K? Ajak.
Yeah. A J A K.
Okay.
Like Ajax. I mean, he's clearly read a lot of this thing out the front of his head. It's so good.
Well, and it's also brilliant. It's like, when was this? Like the late 70s, is it? Early 80s?
77.
Yeah. Just so out of step with everything else that's going on. I love it. Everyone's like really getting into like Luke Cage and master of kung fu and all these kind of exploitations.
And he's just been doing the... Because basically, Kirby was like, he had this idea that Thor and all of that lot were going to die. And then he was going to have some new gods. And that's pretty much what he did for the rest of his life. I haven't read those Topps comics things. I don't know what the level of his involvement was in those. But
limited.
Everything that he authored, like truly authored, you've got the whole New Gods lot for DC. Then you've got the Eternals, Devil Dinosaur, I suppose. That whole
the outlier stuff, yeah. But I think the actual the things. And then you've
finally got
ones.
Silver Star and Captain Victory.
Well, isn't there a thing that essentially Captain Victory is the Eternals? It's just that they just continued it, because there's a guy in it who looks exactly like Captain Victory and stuff. So
this seems to have the Eternals seems to have a much larger cast.
Can't wait till this is a film. I mean, it lends itself so easily to a film.
It'll be nothing like it. But I mean, hopefully the Kirby estate will be well served by it. I don't know what deal was done. No one does.
Because of course the Eternals has the Celestials in it, doesn't it? Which are just fucking amazing.
Yes. Yeah, that's what you want. That's the real marketable. Property there, just these huge, weird, giant things. You know,
space gods.
It's the ultimate Galactus, really.
But they're so good as well, because they're sort of almost faceless. It's like the equivalent of, it's sort of like when you go down, you know, into the insect world and you get smaller and smaller and you start to just see these things where it's just like, what the fuck is that? That doesn't have anything I can recognise as like a face or whatever. They've got that vibe to them, the Celestials. I really think he captured something genuinely quite otherworldly and alien there. The way they're just these sort of faceless things with giant like handles and
weird handles coming out of their mouths and then sort of looking like they're sort of heading for the ear but not actually joining up.
They just look so good as well. The double page spreads that he does for this, because that was what he would do. It was like these really kind of tight six panel comics, but always with like a tremendous psychedelic double page spread. You know, he perfected that in his DC stuff, but I mean, there's nothing like it really, is there? It just isn't. When it's all this weird tech, like, what the fuck is all this? Like, oh, that's so good.
All of that stuff from I think really New Gods onwards, New Gods till Captain Victory
is absolute
dynamite. I do love the way he is tempered by Stan Lee in Fantastic Four, stuff like that, but it always seems like a compromise. But then it's like you get this kind of pretty uncompromised stuff, which really culminates in the just fucking insanity of Silver Star and and Captain Victory, where it's like, yeah, okay, like, I don't know. I feel like the perfect Kirby product was never made, really. There'll be people much probably like yourself going, "What a ridiculous thing to say." But
no, I think
like
there's a truth
his
to that,
his
yeah.
dialogue, his, you know, his visual storytelling is really impeccable, but he trips himself up with all of this like I think he needed to really have a really good, proper symbiotic relationship with a writer, with someone for whom words were their trade. You know, perhaps the Dreamweaver himself.
I think there is an argument to be made. I mean, I you know, I love like Mr. Miracle, I love The Demon. I think they're all like, those are really, really strong comics and they stand alone and they're really great. I think you could make a argument that Commandy is pretty much where he finds his perfect mode, because yeah. it's not tied up in the kind of cosmicness, which is great and always entertaining, but it's where it becomes, it's where his stuff starts to slide into being unreadable sometimes. It's this, because it's just so arcane and specific, and it feels like he's just working something out in his own, on his own in a way. And
it's and wonderful. He can't quite get it out.
He can't quite communicate it.
I mean, yeah, visually it's there, but in terms of the words.
But the Commandy stuff is like, is one of those things where it was like obviously commissioned, like, hey, you know what's popular? Planet of the Apes. Do a Planet of the Apes style comic. And he was like, sure. And then he can't help but add the Kirby oddness. So, you know, you've just got like, you know, Ben Boxer and Brother Eye and all this bizarre stuff. And like, but actually the adventures are really quite... in a way, straightforward, but then he has these like fantastic ideas and all these like different tribes of like dog people and monkey people and stuff like this, and then just like really odd moments of like, I don't know, like there's a I remember like Jeff Lester put up from Wait What put up this thing where it's like this dolphin community. And it's basically like, it's just like he's invented the internet, but he's just done it using dolphins. And it's like these dolphins kind of sharing information and stuff. And it's this amazing like one page splash of this. So he has these moments of like real prescience and stuff, but it's tempered by the fact that Commandy is meant to be this kind of Planet of the Apes style riff. And if you haven't read it, I think you've probably read some.
But
it's pretty great, actually. It's the moment where I think he almost stands alone without the help of another writer, and it is still, it's really compelling and it's really like readable and it just cracks along and it's just endlessly inventive and really fucking brilliant. But I do know what you mean. I feel like there's a kind of platonic ideal of Kirby that never quite happened, where it's just like, you can't quite sort of go, look, here you go, read this. This is all you need. This is the thing. You know, it's like, because if you give someone the New Gods,
massive cosmic thing he was reaching for. You know,
yes,
I think it's sort of inevitable that he never got there. You know?
Yeah. I mean, it's not overstated. It's such well trodden territory. But the fact of the matter is, like, he is one of the premier, like, prime, like, fucking artists of the 20th century. And just a genuine, like, this kind of working class Brooklyn guy who fought his way across fucking Europe as killing Nazis and then just returned and produced this endless just stream of incredible psychedelic cosmic sci-fi fantasy superhero weirdness, just like a furnace of creativity, and burn himself out and sort of died, you know, undervalued and underappreciated, but a legend that just continues to grow. It's like, he's, you know, he's fucking right up there. He belongs, he's on a completely different level to most of his peers and to most people now. He's astonishing.
And having now like consumed entirely the Stan Lee biography.
Oh yeah,
he
yeah.
is someone who he was capitalism. He was short-term gains.
Yeah,
and maintaining artifice and ultimately it's really quite a sad story. Whereas, you know, like, yeah, the legacy of Stan Lee pales in comparison to the ongoing legacy of Kirby. Really. And that is only gonna, and time will only put more emphasis on Kirby rather than Lee, you know.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, yeah. And I think for such a long time, Stan Lee was, you know, he genuinely, as a person, sort of entered into...
I loved Stan Lee, you know. I still love him, you know, but, you know...
But he's... It's almost like him as an icon, isn't it? An actual icon, Stan Lee, rather than a creator. You know, that when you're a kid, yeah. you buy into the myth that, you know, he invented all comics, you know. But actually, it's a tremendous bit of, like, canny marketing, really. A born sort of showman and a born huckster. It's like that's its own form of impressiveness.
His talent was in marketing, you know, and why not?
And it bloody worked, and that can be
celebrated. God knows, we've got celebrity, we've got celebrity chefs, got loads of them. I'm sure there'll be celebrity vets, celebrity doctors, celebrity, you know, I'm waiting for celebrity accountants. I guess that's, in a way, that's Martin Lewis, money expert.
Yeah.
You know, celebrity mechanic, I don't know. Maybe there's someone on the repair shop who, you know, they're all celebrities now. Celebrity wood restorer, you know, I'm sure there's one of those on the repair shop.
I don't think you can think of something that there isn't a celebrity variant of. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Celebrity sewage operatives. It's only a matter of time. Fatberg's big news, you know.
Exactly.
Someone's just got to make a popular documentary about dealing with Fatbergs the size of 10 London buses.
Yeah. And frame it like it's Ghostbusters or something, and everyone will go nuts about it. Great.
Yeah. 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 We've had celebrity cleaners, Kim and Aggie.
Yeah.
Celebrity cameramen. Have we had a celebrity? I'm a cameraman. I film dogs. Can I be a celebrity cameraman?
I mean, I think there are probably celebrity cameramen in terms of, you know, people who, I don't know, really, who sort of... Yeah, it's not. There's not in that kind of sort of commercial arena. Maybe not.
How would you film it? You know,
it'd be interesting. Who films the filmists?
Yeah,
that's what they say, isn't it? That's what they say. Anyway, listen, I'll tell you about something that I read. This week, I got a nice lawn bomb. I should probably have done a lawn bomb unveiling video, audio, but in it was Darker Image. Number one, which is another anthology. It's an anthology special, this. It's an anthology of anthologies, this episode of Silence. And Darker Image came out in 1993. It was one of the earliest sort of comics out of the gate with them, actually, after the initial run of, like, you know, Youngblood and Spawn and Wildcats. This was a chance for them to try some new stuff out and to pitch some great new characters. So it's a three creators involved. There's, like, Sam Keith doing the first appearance of the Max. You've got Rob Liefeld's fantastic and original creation, Blood Wolf. And then you've got Jim Lee's total love letter / kind of pastiche / ripoff of Frank Miller, which is Death Blow. And the assassin, yeah. And this was notable because Jim Lee, like, completely changed his art style and just did something, like, completely different. It's not quite as pronounced as when he actually sort of published the Deathblow comic. And it's kind of testament to Lee that he is a versatile artist and he can turn his hand to slightly different styles in a way. Interestingly, Rob Liefeld tries to do that here. Blood Wolf is basically a really obvious Lobo ripoff, and so much so that Lobo kind of is in it in a kind of panel a little nod to the character. So Rob Liefeld has him walk past Lobo at one point. But Blood Wolf is like a kind of wisecracking asshole, unkillable mercenary with big hair and shit on his face, so just like Lobo.
Wow, stakes are high.
Yeah, and weirdly, he's completely riffing on Keith Giffen in his Trencher Lobo infanticide era, where he stopped doing any shadows and just drew it all in this crazy kind of single line.
Yeah, with all these, lovely like, work.
It's amazing. With all these arrows pointing to things going, and like comic explosions and people having like ridiculous gun battles like right next to each other and stuff. The whole thing is like absurdism writ large. And bless him, this is Rob Liefeld going, I like that. So he's sort of trying to do that stuff too. So there's these panels where it's like very much trying to capture that sort of capering, odd, surreal energy of like Giffen, but obviously it's Rob Liefeld and he's not very good, so it doesn't work really. And there's like a few arrows like exactly in that style pointing to things, and kind of there's a bit where, yeah, like just at the end it's like a big arrow pointing towards some explosives saying big trouble and stuff like that. And you know, like, it's hard not to sort of quite like it, because there's something about Rob Liefeld that it's quite hard not to enjoy it on some level, and especially because he's trying something different. But it's fucking rubbish. And when I've seen people going, you know, rehabilitating Liefeld and saying, you know, blah blah blah, yeah, there is an undeniable like appeal to some of his like the way that, like, you can see that, like, it came at a time where it's like, this looks exciting, and this looks way more exciting than these John Buscema comics that I'm reading, you know. But there's no getting around the fact that he's not a very good artist. And in this comic, there's an amazing bit where there's like three panels at the top of this page, three like long kind of widescreen panels. So it's like the top half of the page, three panels, exactly the same size. In the first panel, it's from above. Blood Wolf is running away from some people and he's shooting a guy and he's running up to his bike. Finally, I made it to my bike, he says. He's got a big sort of floaty space bike. And then he says, my best friend in the world, my constant companion, my buddy, my pal, my ticket out of here. And in the next panel, he's side on. So he's got to his bike, but now it's side on. And then the panel after that, it's the same panel, but with a slight hint of movement. But it's essentially the same panel. So you've got three panels where the camera effectively goes from above to the side, but it really doesn't look like anything's changed. It's really bad. Like, it's really bad. It's like composition 101. No, big no-nos. And it's full of stuff like that. And there's a bit at the end where he's escaping from the planet, and it's like He's meant to be like Blood Wolf's on his flying bike, and he's coming towards the camera, and the planet's behind him, and it's meant to be like
Blood Wolf's on his flying bike.
On his flying bike, and it's like the bike's getting bigger, and the planet's the same size, and then the planet blows up behind him. But he doesn't sell it right, because he doesn't put enough distance between the shots, so it's not like he should have the planet at one size, and then Blood Wolf like really far away, then a bit nearer, and then really close, but he doesn't. They're all quite similar, so it doesn't. It just looks like nothing's moving. Or you have Blood Wolf stay the same size and have the planet get smaller behind him, so it looks like he's zooming, but it doesn't look like either of those things, and it's just not very good. But he's trying, you know what I mean? He's trying. Anyway, it's hilarious and awful, but not unenjoyable. And he does use his, he does turn his bike, his flying bike, into a massive gun at the end. So that's quite enjoyable. And then the Max, which is just this complete like outlier, which is this really surreal, sort of fantastical, whimsical, odd meditation on like abuse and grief. It turned out like the Max is a really odd comic. It's like Sam Keith kind of got big because he around the time of Liefeld and Lee and all those and McFarlane, he was producing these really sort of like grotesque contorted pictures of like Wolverine and stuff like that, and people were like,
"Yeah,
this
isn't it?" Like, it's like the thing he had in common was lots of lines.
Yeah, but he's much more like a Frazetta head, and he's much closer to like Frazetta, and he worked closely with William Messner-Loebs, who helped write the script originally, and Bill Messner-Loebs is a great writer. A really like good and interesting writer. So the Max was like always like head and shoulders a much more interesting comic, really. And I remember like really loving the first few issues I read. It's odd though. I mean, it's literally just dealing with like this character, Julie, who sort of appears to be trying to get over, well, not trying to get over, is recovering from being raped, I think. And it's just really odd because I remember being like, didn't expect this from this Image comic. And it's about the whole sort of fantastical land that the Max and that come from is appears to be some sort of safe space. But it's not quite that simple. And it's an odd, it went all over the map. And it's really like, I don't know, really. People don't seem to talk about it much. But it was for a while very, had its niche. And you know, people were plauditing old Sam Keith quite a lot for doing something, you know, genuinely sort of heartfelt and interesting. I don't know how much that stuff holds up now, possibly not as well as, you know, time has passed, but it's just so weird. You've got this, then you've got Blood Wolf, and then Jim Lee's really boring but sort of stark looking Punisher Frank Miller ripoff Deathblow. And I think there was only one issue of Darker Image. I'm not sure if there are any more of this anthology. But do you know what?
Could
I
it
really
get
loved
any darker.
I did love reading it though.
Darkest Image.
It was a real treat. I'm quite fascinated by these early Image comics. They're odd. Yeah, I'm just saying. I think there was only one. It was intended as a 4-issue miniseries, serving as an introduction to three grim and gritty characters. The series, however, only had one issue, published in March 1993, a gold logo incentive variant, as well as the platinum black and white with silver foil logo version of this issue exists. Each new issue was polybagged with one of three trading cards. You gotta love Image comics, man. They were so good. So weird. Anyway, that was Darker Image. I got loads of good comics off him, but that was the one I wanted to talk about. So
yeah. Thank you for talking about that. Yeah. I enjoyed you talking about that.
Yes. Let's hope
just as I enjoyed the little walk I went for and the little wee that I had while you were talking about
what?
That.
I can't believe it.
How unlike me.
Yeah.
It's great. It's a place I'd never peed in before, just near the garages out the back of our flats. Sorry, spaceships. Lovely. Well, I mean, I don't have anything else to talk about.
I think that's a pretty decent.
The time has come.
The time has come, indeed.
The bladder has spoken. Shall we go?
Let's do it. Because we're both above 40.
That's right. That's right. The future. The future where I reckon there's going to be a late stage renaissance because we've both had catheters fitted, and we'll just be able to pod.
That's when the four hours come in. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. That'll be about 20 years in the future, maybe. You know, 10, 20 years, 15, 20 years. So around the 350 mark at our current rate.
Current rate. Yes.
Of output. Well, dear listener, thank you so much for joining us. I'm sorry if you heard any piss. We love you and thank you so much for those of you who do the C Unit thing, who give us money on Patreon. On Patreon, there is, of course, the wonderful Dan and Fraser's Starlight Adventures, which we've been enjoying. There's another one of those. So, how many have we done? We've done two now. Needs to do a third.
We've done two. Yeah. We'll do a third.
It's
this week, yeah, probably.
I hope so. They're a lot of fun. We enjoy doing them. And they're good to listen to. And there's loads of other stuff. You've got the whole Silence back catalogue, all of the Silence Prestige formats, all of the Earth Pigs, all of Gary Lactus Prunes. It's a lot. And you can have it for just $1 a month if you're tight.
Yeah, unless you want to pay what you should, which is about £10 a month.
But, yeah. Yeah. What I want to get up to, I'd say about $100,000 a month, and we would pump the weirdest shit into the world.
We really would. We really, really would.
and I think it would be really funny. And I would, yeah. It'd be so good to be able to do that, because then, like, I could die thinking, oh, well, that was a laugh. Which is probably what, you know, probably the best way it can happen. Anything else? Oh, of course, you know. I don't think there's any new listeners here. If there are, we do comics. You can buy my comics from FraserGeeson.com. FraserGeeson.com on the internet. Find stuff there. The superior product can be obtained from milkthecat.com.
WordPress.com.
It is .wordpress.com.
Yeah, yeah.
Still,
right. For a while it was .com, and then I had to pay more, so I stopped. It's like, fuck that.
Yeah. At least you didn't let it completely atrophy. And,
no, it's
and
always just sad, isn't it, when you go to see an artist and, oh, they've got a website, and it's like, no, they haven't.
Yeah. Well, it's like, well, I could actually buy this domain.
Yeah. Well, I could buy Jack.
I could be this artist.
Right. Okay. I need to go now because you've had a wee, and now I need a wee. But I can't just go outside because I'm in a house. So.
Yeah. Well, you should prepare yourself with bottles. Until next time, dear listener. Thank you so much for joining us, and we hope you'll join us next time here on
Silence.